Beijing can't be seen to be acquiescing to large protesters, because that would probably be a political disaster for them.
Record numbers of protesters in Hong Kong send a message to Beijing. It's Tuesday, June 18th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Australia, wary of the cyber battleground. Candidates line up for Taiwan's presidential election. New York's popular surf and turf. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Following Sunday's mass protest in Hong Kong, a smaller group of protesters continued to call for the government to abandon plans for a new extradition law. Major roads in the city center were blocked, with many people calling on pro-Beijing Chief Executive Carrie Lam to resign. Early Monday, democracy activist Joshua Wong was released from prison for his role in the 2014 Umbrella Movement that sought for free selection of candidates to run the city. He also called for Lam to resign. Hong Kong's government has suspended action on the legislation, but has not canceled it. Protesters fear it would allow Hong Kong's government to send people to mainland China for trial under mainland laws, which are significantly different from those in the former British colony. Protesters say mainland courts are not fair and independent. Journalist Erin Hale is in Hong Kong and has been watching the protests over the past several days. She spoke with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson about the latest developments.
Today, there were several thousand protesters on the streets, kind of on and off around LegCo. They did manage to close off a few smaller streets. It stayed fairly small compared to yesterday. I think a lot of people are just very tired and regrouping. And it's been a long week. So the protesters who were out today were kind of more, I guess, the younger people who are a little bit more hardcore compared to yesterday, where yesterday it was like just a lot of normal people and families. So these are like the student activists, I think, who are mostly out today.
Joshua Wong, who had led the Umbrella Movement a few years ago, was just released from prison today. Does he have a role in these protests?
He hasn't yet, but I think his release has really recharged people. You know, he is possibly the most visible activist in Hong Kong, at least internationally. And, you know, he's very widely respected. So his timing was very good. And I think, you know, as I said, a lot of people are probably tired. They've really been pushing quite hard for a week now. Yeah, he's just kind of brought new energy and I think new optimism. And he's vowed to keep protesting until Carrie Lam resigns and the bill is withdrawn. So now, that's a big win for them.
Yeah, really, to have them in there. Now, what's expected in the coming days?
Tomorrow there's supposed to be an executive council meeting, so that would be in Carrie Lam's office. And I think after that, there are some reports that an announcement could be made. Perhaps they will announce that the bill has been withdrawn. A lot of sort of more analyst-type people I spoke to today said that Carrie Lam is effectively dead politically because of this, but she has to wait to resign, basically to save face and for Beijing, because there's no really clear successor for her at this point, so they have to wait to find someone. And also, you know, Beijing can't be seen to be acquiescing to large protesters, because that would probably be a political disaster for them. So perhaps they'll give the protesters a little bit of what they want, which is to fully withdraw the bill. But as for Lam to go, she's probably going to wait about 6 or 7 months.
Journalist Erin Hale in Hong Kong speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you go online and visit voanews.com. Chinese state media say Xi Jinping to visit North Korea this week. China says suspected blast caused minor quake near North Korea border. Duterte calls for calm over Chinese sinking of fishing boat. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories, many more as well, on Facebook at VOA Asia and our website, voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Australian military chiefs are warning of the threat from increasingly sophisticated cyber attacks. They say that while the dangers do not need a traditional military response, Australia must find new ways to combat them. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
Propaganda isn't new, but the way it's delivered by technology is changing rapidly. Senior Australian Defence Force officers believe their nation is increasingly exposed to cyber attacks and misinformation. They've echoed concerns raised in the United States about the use of computer attacks and the manipulation of social and mass media during Russia's efforts to seize Crimea from Ukraine in 2014. General Angus Campbell is the chief of the Australian Defence Force.
In a world that's becoming more connected, these activities range from information campaigns, cyber operations and theft of intellectual property to coercion and propaganda that subvert, erode and undermine, breaking international rules and norms, but ones that, in the eyes of the targeted state, fall short of requiring a war response.
China is suspected of orchestrating a surge of cyber attacks on Australian businesses. In December, Australia said its companies were among the global victims of an extensive campaign of cyber espionage attacks backed by the Chinese government. The confirmation came after the US Justice Department charged two Chinese nationals, alleging they carried out hacking on behalf of Beijing's Ministry of State Security. It was the first time Australia had explicitly blamed China for cyber crime. Earlier this year, computers at Federal Parliament in Canberra were hacked in what officials believed was the work of a foreign government. A recent report suggested that Australia needed to train 18,000 additional computer experts by 2026 to fight the cybersecurity wars. But there was a warning that at the present rate, the country was likely to fall short. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The Taiwan ruling party's expected nomination this week of Beijing-wary incumbent President Tsai Ing-wen for a second term in office will kick off a campaign season highlighted by the island's sticky, increasingly strained ties with China. Tsai won't talk to officials in Beijing unless the communist government drops its demands that she identifies Taiwan as a part of a single China. The 62-year-old law scholar, first elected in 2016, is expected to run with the Democratic Progressive Party against an opposition Nationalist Party candidate who favors more engagement with Beijing. Their views would shape a campaign that will last until Taiwanese go to the polls in January. Tsai's primary win means the ruling party is confident she can win re-election. Some experts, like Liu Yi-jun, a public affairs professor, say... He's from Fo Guang University in Taiwan.
This will easily consolidate the kind of party unity within the DPP. And also, Han Kuo-yu and Guo Taiming, they will know that the forthcoming election is not going to be easy.
Many voters also want strong economic ties with China, seeking stronger economic ties to stimulate investment and trade with the $13 trillion Chinese GDP, but without political concessions. China today urges its 170-plus diplomatic allies to avoid free trade deals with Taiwan, which is hobbling economic growth. The Nationalists are scheduled to pick a candidate in July. The frontrunners include Han Kuo-yu, the populist mayor of the southern city of Kaohsiung, and Terry Guo, chairman of the giant consumer electronics assembler Foxconn Technology. Han has worked out a deal to sell local farm products to China. The Foxconn head builds gear such as Apple's iPhones at factories in China. China has always been a focus of politics in Taiwan, but this year the topic took on extra weight because of a landmark pro-unification speech by Chinese President Xi Jinping aimed at Taiwan. Taiwan's ties with the United States, a former Cold War foe of China, grew more intense last year under Tsai and U.S. President Donald Trump. Coming up, Manhattan residents are treated to different wildlife. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia. Two strong earthquakes hit China's southwestern Sichuan province late Monday, with state media reporting at least one death. The U.S. Geological Survey said the first quake of 5.9 magnitude was followed shortly afterwards by a 5.2 quake in the same area. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues on sea and on land, New York City has countless attractions for its many visitors. Now there's a new and very unusual tourist draw, whale watching. It seems more and more whales are being spotted near Manhattan. Environmentalists say it's an encouraging sign the water is becoming cleaner. Anna Nelson has this story narrated by Anna Rice.
Unlikely neighbors, New York skyscrapers, and large magnificent whales. But it's now reality in Manhattan. Thanks to much better water quality, scientists say the whales are swimming close to New York Harbor again after a century. They began returning a few years ago, attracting tourists and locals. That's when lifelong aquarium curator Paul C. Suerda founded the all-volunteer organization Gotham Whale. The group gathers information about these creatures and passes it along to scientists.
And we do that through citizen scientists. That could be anyone walking this boardwalk. If there was a whale breaching or feeding out here, and they were able to take a photograph to document that, that would go into our database as a data point.
Scientists use the information to track the whale's movement and make sure boats and vessels in the harbor slow down when the whales are most active. Some boats, like American Princess, carry tourists hoping to catch a glimpse or snap a picture of the creatures.
Oh, there he is.
Down there.
New whale photographs are compared to others in a catalog that scientists have kept for years. More than 105 have been identified so far.
Now, to be able to work with these animals that are free and happy and having them come back to the New York waters is just fantastic.
A mere stop on a long journey for the whales, but a powerful signal about nature's resilience.
From the water to dry ground, New York is embracing a new environmentally friendly, although not quite revolutionary, way to eradicate weeds in the city's Riverside Park. The Big Apple is welcoming 24 goats that will spend the summer in the park eating away invasive plants and poison ivy. Anna Rice returns to narrate this story by Elena Wolf.
You guys, this is Mac.
It's hard to believe these are just goats, not movie stars. There's a fenced-off path, park rangers here and there, people cheering and trying to snap a picture. Dan Gorodnik, president of New York's Riverside Park, was proud to officially introduce the herd to passersby. Goats, sent here from a farm on nearby Staten Island, are known for being very calm and obedient. And, what's more important, for always being ready to snack.
We also know that for them, this is like treating them to an all-you-can-eat buffet. It is a wonderful occasion. They've got the best views of the Hudson River.
Invasive plants, including poison ivy and mugwort, have not been trimmed here for decades. But what pesticides may not be able to conquer, goats will be happy to call lunch.
Goats have a very rugged digestive system, and it kills the seeds. So they're not only clearing the ground, they're not replanting.
Larry Sahanek came up with this organic business idea some 14 years ago. So this is not the first business trip for his goats. He has sent them to states across the country, from California to Virginia. But his goats have never been to the Big Apple before.
You could train a goat to do practically anything a dog does, except bark.
For the next 3 months, the goats will be working in Riverside Park, so close to visitors but untouchable, behind a special fence. And it seems they already feel at home in New York. After all, the city's nickname, Gotham City, means goat's town in Anglo-Saxon. For Elena Wolf in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online on iTunes and SoundCloud, streaming daily on VOA Asia Facebook, and our website, voanews.com. You'll also find us on the radio throughout Asia. Great radio stations like PSU Radio, Patani FM, 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand. Thanks to everyone there who's tuned in today. Our thanks always go out to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a nice day.